Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Haunted History. I'm your host, Megan, and every week I'm going to be taking you on a little journey through our world's haunted history. I hope everyone had a productive week. I don't know what's happening here on the West Coast, but it has been unseasonably hot. I think this is the first time in a really long time that while I was putting up my Halloween decorations, I had to wear a t-shirt because it was so warm outside. And for all my Canadian listeners, I hope you had a lovely Thanksgiving over the weekend and ate lots of turkey and stuffing and potatoes and pie. Mine was very low-key. My Halloween scary movie marathon continues. So if you're interested in what I'm watching, take a look at my stories on Instagram. I'm sharing them there and I have a highlight. And if you haven't had a chance to check out last Friday's bonus episode, you definitely should. It's on the history of the vampire, and it's very interesting to hear how it originated and then morphed into the vampires that we're familiar with today. Now, let's get to today's story. What if I told you that the asylum responsible for churning out the villains in the Batman comics was real? Or at least, there exists a real-life analog to it. Today, I'm taking you all on a tour of another one of America's most haunted asylums, a place known as the birthplace of the lobotomy. Come with me as I tell you the origin story of the inspiration for the Arkham Asylum, the Danvers State Hospital. This episode contains depictions of mental illness, abuse of vulnerable people, and dehumanizing treatment. It's 1878, and after 4 years of construction, the Danvers State Hospital is finally ready for its first occupants. We're in rural Massachusetts, in bucolic farmland that's a stone's throw away from Boston. Think New England Gothic. At the heart of the hospital is a sprawling red brick structure with granite trim called the Kirkbride Complex, designed by a Boston architect named Nathaniel Bradley. It's a towering building built in the Victorian Gothic style, something straight out of the Addams Family playbook. Danvers State Hospital is perched atop Hathorne Hill, where the judge that presided over the Salem witch trials, John Hathorne, once resided in a house built by his father. The hospital is named after the town of Danvers, which was historically known as Salem Village up until 1752. You see, at the turn of the 19th century, following the American Civil War, the government of Massachusetts saw fit to build a new psychiatric hospital, as nearby hospitals were filled to the brim. State-sponsored institutions were the way to go, and the Danvers, stately and somewhat opulent, would be leading the charge. Subscribing to the belief of Dr. Thomas Story Kirkbride, the hospital administration believed that the proximity to nature would be beneficial to the patients. In this method, called the Kirkbride Plan, it was believed that the setting was indivisible from the patient's healing process. For this purpose, scenic Hawthorne Hill, with its sprawling 100 acres of land, was chosen. In the design plans, Kirkbride was mindful of keeping the spaces free of darkness, as he believed that unobstructed views of the grounds and maximum sunlight was the key to healing. So, the hospital consisted of one main center building and four staggered wings radiating on either side. So far, so good, right? We've got state money being poured into a new project aimed toward healing folks that are unwell. The project was a massive undertaking, too. It was a 313,000 square foot building that was meant to treat patients with the most modern treatments available. By the time the Castle on the Hill was completed on May 1st, 1874, $1.5 million had been poured into the project. Over the years, 40 additional buildings would be added to the property in order to make it increasingly self-sufficient, with a fully working farm. There were staff cottages, pump houses, a vegetable storage barn, male and female annexes, and a chapel. There was even a network of underground labyrinthian tunnels dug in order to connect all the buildings in inclement weather. I don't know about you, but my spidey senses are already starting to tingle. And if you're like me, then you should probably know that that feeling isn't quite off the mark. Because in 1878, the Danvers State Hospital also added another element to its compound, a patient cemetery. Now, dear listener, let's delve into the darker side of Danvers and bring to light some of its underbelly. When the hospital first opened, it was called the Danvers Lunatic Hospital, or sometimes the State Hospital for the Insane. These names were common at the time as mental illness was severely misunderstood. That being said, Danvers was originally a cutting-edge facility in the humane treatment of patients suffering from mental health struggles. They were adamant about never using physical restraints on patients, and they advocated against simply hiding them away from society. This was the reason the grounds were so large, as patients were encouraged to roam them in a simulacrum of freedom. The patients were encouraged to exercise and stroll the property's expansive gardens. It was thought that the very presence of peaceful surroundings would be enough to get the patients to snap out of their delusional state. Of course, we now know that it isn't that easy. The hospital was initially built to accommodate around 500 patients. By the 1930s, that number had ballooned up to over 2,000 people, with the number of staff remaining the same. It was reported that for an evening shift, 9 staff members would be caring for the whole lot of patients. Some patients were forced to live in the basement of the hospital, defying the Kirkbride plan that encouraged bright, sunny spaces. It appeared that the hospital was beginning to shift from its mission statement. What's more, state money was slowing to a trickle as state funding began to dwindle. The twin misfortunes of overcrowding and underfunding resulted in an overall quality of care taking a nosedive. Some of the principles that Danvers State Hospital had originally aligned itself with, modernity in its treatment practices, and the more humane treatment of people suffering from mental illness, seemed to fall by the wayside. Records show that staff began to use what was referred to as special garments, presumably straitjackets, in order to control patients. In 1939, the number of patients living on the site reached 2,360. It was reported that 278 people died on site that year. In 1948, the first lobotomy was performed at the hospital by a physician named Walter Jackson Freeman II. A lobotomy is a highly controversial procedure in which the connections in the brain's prefrontal cortex are severed. It's such a brutal technique that supposedly treated a person's mental illness at the expense of their personality and autonomy. Historically, marginalized folks were the most at risk of being lobotomized, with statistics pointing to an overwhelming majority of women and gay men being subjected to, essentially, sanctioned torture. Visitors reported zombified people aimlessly roaming the halls of Danvers Hospital, exhibiting slurred speech and barely conscious. In these dazed states, the patients of Danvers State Hospital were ghosts even before they died. Patients began to be increasingly mistreated. There were reports of people walking in the halls naked and living in their own filth for lack of basic hygiene care. Patients who had been restrained with straitjackets would be neglected and often completely forgotten. In the 1950s, shock therapy started being used on patients at Danvers, adding to the list of continuing mistreatments. The shock therapies caused immense fear and pain in patients, who often cowered when faced with the prospect of being subjected to them. Years later, when the hospital was finally closed down and the buildings lay abandoned, curious visitors would report hearing disembodied voices and wails, as well as phantom patients clamoring for assistance in the empty halls. Perhaps one such lost soul was Anne Houghton. In 1987, Anne, who was a patient, wandered out of the hospital and was found dead less than 200 yards away from the main building. It was reported that she died of a heart attack. This kind of neglect tainted Danvers State Hospital. With patients perishing under frantic and maladaptive practices, and the overly lavish building beginning to decay for lack of repair, a perfect brew of melancholy began to bubble over. The grounds became drenched in a haunted energy, and the fate of Danvers was becoming increasingly sealed. As state institutions began to be replaced by community-driven care centers, the sustainability of maintaining an immense derelict building such as Danvers was questioned. Finally, in 1992, the hospital transferred the last of its patients to another hospital and officially closed its doors, leaving the site abandoned for the next 13 years. In 2003, a team of ghost hunters documented their very controlled visit to the then-defunct Danvers State Hospital. I did rely on their firsthand account for this story. Because the facility was historically closed off to the public, it garnered a fair bit of attention for the urban exploration, a sort of subculture, if you will, whereby civilians take it upon themselves to visit places that are normally off limits to the layperson. Over 120 would-be ghost hunters have been denied access to the site over the years. The site was guarded by police and private security while it lay, otherwise abandoned, adding to the mystique, no doubt. A resident of Salem, Bob Murch, is quoted in the ghost hunter's account as saying that the state is partly responsible for the Danvers allure by categorically refusing access to the grounds. Bob, for his part, was keen to do a seance there. You see, at the time, he was co-organizer of Salem's Festival of the Dead, an annual festival that attempts to elucidate mysteries surrounding the afterlife, offered by Salem's community of witches, mediums, and fellow paranormal keeners. The festival is still going on to this day. In a report highlighting the details of their visit, ghost hunter Michael Puffer notes that the building's architecture alone lies defiant and remarkable in the landscape of the area. It's grandiose and imposing. Locals refer to it as the Castle on the Hill or the Palace on the Hill, but it also has another nickname, the Haunted Castle. It can be surmised that the haunting aura of the Danvers State Hospital is fed by the very real horrors that some of society's most vulnerable people were subjected to there. As we mentioned earlier, the hospital grounds contained many additional buildings, many of which being staff accommodation. In his article detailing the ghost hunting expedition at Danvers, Michael Puffer recounts talking to a woman named Geraldine Levasseur, who grew up on the hospital grounds as her father was an employee. She recalled hearing footsteps in the upstairs hallway of the family's home when it was known that no one was upstairs. She also recalled that she and her siblings were playing in the attic one day when the apparition of an older woman materialized before them. The woman's face was frozen in an angry scowl. She also remembers having her bed covers completely yanked off of her while she was in bed, even if there was no one else in the room. She believes that the spirits that haunt the grounds are tortured. When they were alive and deep in the throes of their mental illness, they would have experienced the primitive forms of shock therapy as nothing less than a wanton persecution. The grounds, she believes, are steeped in residual energy of their time there. Some paranormal researchers have characterized Danvers State Hospital as capable of generating a type of personalized haunting. That is to say, because the negative psychic imprint of that place is so deep, Danvers can manufacture ill feelings in you if you set foot in there. In other words, although physical manifestations of actual specters have been rarely documented, the area's aura produces targeted feelings of unease that are specific to you, like your inner fears. Interestingly, only one paranormal investigation group, the Rhode Island Paranormal Research Group, was allowed to stay overnight at Danvers. However, they weirdly never spoke publicly about their stay, nor did they generate any public reports on their time there. Very eerie. As we touched upon at the beginning of this story, Danvers also has its own on-site cemetery. The cemetery is strangely not off-limits to the public. It holds the remains of patients that died at the hospital and whose bodies lay unclaimed by their families. Hundreds of people are buried there, Their individual graves are marked by numbers, with a plaque identifying some of the deceased located on the cemetery grounds. Reports have surfaced that people have seen gray mists and fleeting black shadows roam the cemetery grounds. Perhaps it's because the spirits of the dead remain tormented about their ill treatment, which apparently didn't just end with their death. Altogether, the cemetery on the grounds of Danvers State Hospital holds 770 souls. This brings us to another facet we talked about earlier, the tunnels. The tunnels were supposedly built so that all of the areas of the complex could be readily accessed during the wintertime. However, there are legends that state they were also used to usher bodies out of the hospital without further aggravating the other patients. Some reports have even said that the patients' bodies were sometimes left to rot for days before being carried out, as patients would die out of sight of staff. The horrific history of the Danvers State Hospital are said to be the inspiration for H.P. Lovecraft's Arkham Sanitarium in his short story, The Thing on the Doorstep. As for Lovecraft, who was a literary great best known for speculative horror stories, he inspired the concept of the Arkham Asylum as a part of the Batman mythos. In the DC-verse, Arkham Asylum houses and subsequently churns out several villains, most notably Batman's arch-nemesis, the Joker. This is actually quite interesting, as from an aerial point of view, the Kirkbride building kind of looks like a bat in flight. Places like Danvers State Hospital carry a legacy of pain. The hauntings are not only your average nuts and bolts, ghosts and orbs, but more so the idea that tremendous mistreatment was wrongfully doled out in the name of care. Our collective understanding of mental illness has made strides since then, and there still is so much work to do. This story reminds us that hauntings can take the form of a greater societal failing. I'll leave you today with some words by Bob Murch. I believe whether good things or bad things happen in a place, I don't know whether the feelings get trapped inside the walls or the building, but they just stick there. There have certainly been enough bad things that have happened there that it will stick around for a while. Well, that's it for me today, friends. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And remember, because this month is the best month of the year, I'm going to be dropping another bonus episode on Friday, October the 13th. And just a little hint, it's going to be an episode that has connections to this story. So don't forget to tune in this Friday.